Good morning. Welcome back to our live broadcast from Tanglewood. Right now, in just as we speak, a beautiful ceremony is taking place. They're going to be cutting a ribbon in a few moments, all in celebration of the opening of the new Lindy Center for Music and Learning to honor all those who played a key role in the project's completion, including the funders, builders, and BSO staff.
All the big shots will be joining us soon after their official duties are finished this morning. In the meantime, we have a special Berkshire-based mini roundtable panel.
And what a panel it is. We welcome the editor and publisher of the Columbia paper, our dear friend Perry Teasdale. Good morning, Perry. How are you? I don't hear you, but I'm sure we'll take care of that. We'll press a button, and miraculously, we'll be able to hear your voice.
Oh, that would be nice.
There you
it
go.
Is.
We have you now.
Hey, can we add Taconics to the
Absolutely.
Mountains?
We can always add the Taconics.
As secondary, because it's
yes.
certainly...
Yes, nothing is secondary. No, we're all good. We're all together. The Berkshire Eagle executive editor, Kevin Moran, is with us. We missed you last year. You were MIA last year. You're with us this year. We are thrilled that you're here.
It's wonderful to be back, and you can have the Taconics, and I'll take the Berkshire Hills. How about that?
Fair enough.
Yeah, sounds like a good division. Yeah, I like it. But what's left for Jen Smith? She is a Berkshire Eagle reporter, a regular panelist on our program. We're delighted that we're on her home turf. Good morning, Jen.
It's good to be here and have you all here on our home turf.
I just want to say, Joe, she does work and get paid by the Berkshire Eagle. There's no question about it, but she really is ours.
Yep.
Uh-oh.
Them fighting words, Alan.
Yeah. I think
there will be an arm wrestling match live broadcast here later, right?
She has so much talent. There's a lot to go around. So that is fantastic. Well, good morning to you all. We are here. We're going to talk about the debate in a moment, and I want to get to that because that's a big deal, obviously. I do just quickly want to say this. We are here at the Lindy Center. This is an amazing place. It's a $33 million project as part of a $60+ million project. And it has been in the works for a long time, and here it is, and I think it's safe to say it's pretty beautiful.
And I want to say one more thing, and that is WAMC has no greater friend than Tanglewood. The Boston Symphony has been nothing but wonderful to this radio station. And a good part of our success can be just attributed to their help and everything they've done to help us.
Absolutely. And this is one more beautiful part of their complex. Normally, we broadcast from the press porch, which is not too far from the shed, and it's a beautiful Highwood Manor, and we broadcast there. We broadcast there for almost 20 years, I think. And so this is the second time. The first time we broadcast not from there was when were you here with us, Sarah, when that happened, when the truck went out? And anyway, Taryn was, and we broadcast from your desk, didn't we, Taryn? Yeah, that was fun. And then this is the second time, but this one is actually on purpose. And we're in the Volpe family studio, and what a beautiful place.
And let me just say one thing, add one thing to that, and that is it's, you know, it's like going back to camp every year, right, when we come back here. And I love the smell of the press porch, and I love the way that it looks.
Well,
and
this place smells new. I still smell lacquer.
And I said nothing could possibly replace the press porch. But, boy, this is pretty comfortable and pretty beautiful.
Well, I think, Alan, what you know, you're spot on. I think Tanglewood is part of the definition of the Berkshires when it comes to culture and economic activity. But what's interesting about the Lindy Center is that it's really going to take Tanglewood as a year-round operation, at a year-round venue. And so I think it'll be interesting to get acquainted with these grounds during the late fall, some of the winter programming that they'll have. And that'll be interesting.
And of course, they're going to have to be pushing an awful lot of snow out of the way.
This is true.
Well, Berkshireites are used to that.
Yeah, you know.
And Taconicites.
But I think what you noted too, Alan, was that, you know, you're like, where are all these young people? We have this lovely view of the lawn outside of the Lindy Center right now. And there's people of all ages and backgrounds here. And I think that's part of the mission of what the Institute is all about too, is to make those connections between the music and what the BSO and Tanglewood does and the community. And, you know, Tanglewood's I've covered a lot of programs here from their partnership with the Highland Street Foundation to some of their other programs. They're expanding to use the Pittsfield Common this year as a satellite broadcast space to share the work that is done. And I think, you know, as the community engagement editor at the Eagle, we know how important it is to have these institutions have a presence in the larger community. I remember growing up in high school, coming here to watch a symphony rehearsal as a music student, and that has made a lasting impression. And I came back here on Saturday night to see Postmodern Jukebox.
And then you became a and then you became a reporter.
There you go.
We're broadcasting live from the Lindy Center at Tanglewood, and it's a very special morning, and I thank you all for joining us. Let us go to what happened last night, to the debate. We have about 15 minutes or so to talk about it. Look, it was interesting. I thought it was fascinating. There was a tremendous amount of I was listening to hours of coverage this morning and people parsing it out to say who won and who lost and all of that. So let me throw it out for just general thoughts of what you made of the proceedings. Perry, we haven't heard from you yet.
Well, to me, it was livelier than the first debate, only because there was real conflict of vision and of policy and of history. Certainly, that confrontation between Kamala Harris and Joe Biden was the banner moment. But then there was that whole loosing of everybody's voice constantly and no one wanting to pay any attention to the moderators that said these people are really anxious to have something to say. And most of them, I thought, did. The thing is that some of them seemed to be interviewing for Secretary of Agriculture or Interior or something rather than running for president. When you stack them up against the people who clearly had thought a lot about it and had formed their ideas, and I think of Buttigieg, I think of Kamala Harris, and I have to give A for effort to Kirsten Gillibrand, New York State Senator, because she really tried to make herself a meaningful presence in the debate. I don't know whether she succeeded. Certainly,
wasn't it annoying though? It seemed.
I was going to think that. I thought it was sort of pathetic, to be honest with you.
Well, I'm saying she was trying, and I give her that A for effort. But
you're
I don't think it was
you're a nicer person than I am. I thought it was pathetic.
Well, you were extremely diplomatic this morning when you were talking to David Gustina about the woman who was on the far left end, whose name escapes me.
Marianne Williamson.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I'm sorry not to know that.
You know, Perry. Love will keep us together.
You know, I said there's a lot of places where marijuana is legal in the United States. And is there a correlation? I'm not suggesting anything about her. I didn't know about her. I think I know a lot more about her. And she did raise some good points during the debate, actually. But was it about being president? I wasn't quite sure.
Well, who came off a little bit better, Kirsten Gillibrand or Marianne Williamson?
Well, at least Marianne Williamson was fun.
Yeah. I thought Kirsten Gillibrand made some important points, but at a certain point, I don't want to hold her to a different standard, because I think there were other people, for me, who I wondered, why are you here?
Kevin, I saw your eyebrows go up.
Well, I mean, you know, it's such a crowded field right now, and really, I think the point of these initial debates here is to, besides the rowdiness of it all, is to sort of see who pokes through the miasma of Democratic politics right now. And right now, I really do think that the entire Democratic political side of things is so in flux. I think it's going to be interesting as the Democrats have to sort of define their party over the next couple of years is before the election. And I think that will be fascinating. You know, Kirsten Gillibrand, I thought, made some good points. I mean, she really was up there speaking for women. Somebody has to say then, of course, Kirsten, that's, you know, in her wheelhouse. She has that track record. But I also think right now you're looking at to see, you know, who the big winners are. I think, you know, Kamala Harris, +2 last night.
Yeah.
Personally, I thought Biden, right or wrong, got pretty beat up last night. I would give him minus one. I think Mayor Buttigieg did extremely well. I think he was well spoken, and he was, you know, seemed to me the most calm demeanor, really the most articulate and the most measured of all the candidates.
He seemed presidential.
He really did seem presidential. And is it me or I'm not aware. Again, I'm not a you know, student of presidential election history, but it's you know, it's a small town city essentially. Yeah. that he's representing. You know, the night before, I think Mayor de Blasio got a plus one.
I think Julian Castro.
Julian Castro. I think Julian was second. And who did I think was first? In the first debate, I can't remember.
Elizabeth Warren did
Elizabeth
very
Warren,
well.
Thank you, of course. Yeah, yeah. I think she was that last night. And I think I think people are sort of getting to know some of these candidates right now. Well, and it's an opportunity for them. I think, you know, Cory Booker, I think didn't do so well on the first night, quite honestly.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, what it's all about. And that's, you know, what are the takeaways from this? I think, you know, the night before, all of a sudden, Julian Castro was like one of the most Googled persons. Last night, it was Kamala Harris. People who weren't considered the frontrunners, because everyone was like, it's about Biden, it's about Bernie, maybe, you know, Warren, maybe some of these other yeah. folks. But I think now going ahead, who's more memorable? And I think listening to some of the coverage of folks who were just, you know, at a bar or something watching these conversations, you could hear in real time them starting to question who, you know, they were going and rooting for one candidate. And even I think that's the interesting about the Sanders fans, that people were criticizing him, saying that he wasn't as assertive as he has been, you know, on the trail up until now. And so I think going back to what Kevin said about the Democratic Party will have to figure out who are the defining spokespeople, I guess, for their candidacy, for their platforms. And again, you know, like Perry was saying, some people were really grasping onto certain issues, and you know, was that relevant to a presidential debate? You don't know, but I think now it's you know, see who makes it to the next round.
I think it's interesting that it took. You know, eight minutes into this conversation for Bernie Sanders' name to be mentioned.
I think that struck me, too.
Stick a fork in him. Done.
Yeah, I think he's done, too.
Well, there wasn't anything. Alan.
And I voted for him last time.
But did you hear anything last night that you didn't hear when he was running in 2016?
No.
It was just the greatest
hits. Sort of, well, it also looked like sort of a howdy-doody puppet, you know,
yeah.
Just somebody pulling on the back of his head. You know, I did think, in contradistinction to my friend Kevin, that I think that Biden didn't do as badly as Kevin is suggesting, and other people are suggesting also. I think he has established the reputation of being the adult in the room. And I think an awful lot of people want an adult compared to what they've got now as President of the United States. So, you know, he smiled benevolently. He answered back. He didn't get angry. To me, that showed a lot. But, of course, a lot of people are raising this morning, is he going to do that when Trump and he's debating Trump?
Well, I think what's playing out is what a lot of people expected, though, is that he has all this experience, and so he's going to have to stand for his experience, whether it was good decision-making or poor decision-making. And I think I was surprised that he was blindsided by Kamala.
Why was he not better
because
prepared
like,
to answer that question?
If he has a good team and a smart team these days, I mean, you know, to think that that's not going to come up in this day and age is sort of really naive.
To Kevin's point, you know, none of us are, so we're not political experts of running campaigns, but by the same token, any of us could have advised him to maybe brush up on that answer, right? I mean, it just seemed that
it'd
been something.
Who wants to remind everybody about what the answer was?
Well, I don't think it was much of an answer, unfortunately. He said, my time is up, and he stopped abruptly, and I think that really hurt him. The question, of course, was posed to him by Kamala Harris about race and about segregation, and said that she was that girl. The campaign brilliantly put out a photo at the exact moment of her waiting for the bus. So it was a very powerful moment. Then Joe Biden tried to answer. He stumbled a couple of times in that answer. When it was fact checked, it wasn't actually what he was saying wasn't actually true. And then he just stopped talking, and it just seemed it was more awkward perhaps than it
had
been.
Well, and he also blamed the states, and as a presidential leader, when you're talking about federal policies, and he says it's not the federal government's role, it's you default to the states.
I think it goes further than that.
Yeah.
Because what he said when he talked about the senators that he had done political business with, is that they were people he had to deal with, and he had now moved on. But the states' rights is exactly what allowed Jim Crow to stay in place. And that to me was a much greater gaffe than if he just said, well, I've moved on, you know, I'm different.
I hear everything you guys are saying, and I certainly understand it. However, this guy thinks that he's going to win, and that he has to win a presidential election.
Yes.
And there are a lot of people in the middle, because believe me, the Republicans and the Democrats are not who we're talking about. So you have to...
Fun drive's over.
Yeah.
Hello, Alan. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Yes, right. Well, it's unbelievable. And I'm so sorry that nobody knows that I'm on the radio right now. However, oh, God, there's got to be some way out of this. So I am so sorry. So but he has to run for president. He wants the people in the middle... If he peaks too early, moving left, he loses some of them. He wants to maintain them. Look, I think this is a difficult thing to do, to run for this office, and I think that's what this is all about right now.
So you look at where we are now, and I think the next debate we have a month.
It's about a month away. Yeah.
A month away. So one would
only
think,
a month.
Only a month. Well, you would think that at some point we'll start to see a couple of candidates start to peel off, you would think, but maybe not.
I still can't figure out why everybody's in it. I think some people want the name recognition, and that's one thing that makes them.
I think there's a lot of anger on the Democratic side toward Trump, but I also think there's a lot of party disarray. I mean, there's a complete shift in the left of the Democratic Party, and so therefore, I have to go back to this, this thought I had about, over the next, until election day, the Democratic Party is going to have to be in a process of self-definition.
Well, Kevin, but why so many non-entities are in it? I don't get that. Except that my basic thesis is their mother.
Well, where you usually their mother, saw
their mother told them very early when they first got elected dog catcher that they would one day be president of the United States.
Well, I don't think you could just write them off as non-entities. I think you have to write them off if you're going to write them off at all, and say these were people who were not as telegenic and not as successful as some of the others. It doesn't mean they are. People, some of the people who seemed the least prepared were the people who had the best records. Some of the people who didn't look good on television were some of the people who had done the most. They were touting their own records, and that is, it didn't help them particularly, because people don't care what they did in the past. They want to hear vision and or whatever. I don't even want to ascribe motive to viewers as much as to say it's just that they don't fit the mold of what people are looking for in this age, and people are looking more than anything else for someone who can beat Trump.
And some of them are disgraceful because they should be running for United States Senate, which is going to be the huge difference between the way this country goes or falls from democracy.
But I think that's also might be what spurred these candidates to step up for presidential roles, is that same wave of all these new folks that we had running for different roles in Congress, and they just for whatever reason, and you can't deny the numbers. They did fulfill their petition and their fundraising obligations to get on the stages this week. So I think people are looking for who can beat Trump, but I think that definition and that mold, they're looking for a new mold. And I think that's why you're seeing so many people.
We are out of time, but my thanks to all of you to come in and see the cool new Lindy Center, as well as their pastries, too. And we've been catered. It's lovely. We want to thank editor and publisher of the Columbia Paper, Perry Teasdale, Berkshire Eagle executive editor, Kevin Moran, and Berkshire Eagle reporter, Jen Smith. Thank you all for being with us. Have a beautiful summer.
You too.
Thank you. Coming up next, we are going to, Alan will talk with Emmanuel Ax, who will be doing the opening night performance of the BSO a week from tonight. I'll chat with Earth, Wind, and Fire co-founder Philip Bailey. They're setting up right now in the shed. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.